Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast and our last episode for the month of July. I want to thank everyone who supported us this month. Really a great month for us, our record for amount of listens. Thank you for all our new patrons. We're going to be able to make a very nice donation to our friends, the Insuperabili nonprofit in Italy. So today, we have the latest on all the transfer buzz. We are recording this on Tuesday morning. A lot of news broke out today. So we're going to talk about Dybala and Lukaku, Moise Kean. We are going to talk about Bruno Fernandes, Pepe. Briefly, those deals are all but done. And then we're going to talk quite a bit about Milan's weekend in Boston. I got to spend some time at the training session at the game, so we're going to get into that. We have our usual Twitter questions segment for our patrons only. And we have a great interview with one of our favorite returning guests, Alex Frosio from Gazzetta dello Sport. We are going to talk a lot about the coaches in Serie A with him. And we are going to close the podcast. The last segment will be on Tarantino's new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the producer, co-host of this podcast, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, before we jump into all the transfer rumors, I just want to ask you about something that came up in recent days. So we had Patrick Cutrone, who was here in Boston, left Milan's training sessions. He's joining Wolverhampton. He was very less than pleased with having to leave Milan. You could just see it in the videos of him talking once he arrived at Malpensa Airport in Italy, how unhappy he was with the move. But the club had essentially told him there wasn't a future for him playing there, and he was essentially more valuable as a financial asset to Milan. On the flip side, we've had Fiorentina, who are going out of their way to retain Federico Chiesa. Last week, there were some videos of Chiesa who looked like he was in a hostage situation after Fiorentina had told them they were essentially forcing him to stay despite the facts he wants to join Juve. So, Alex, I want to ask you, just in general, what's your sentiment when clubs make deals against the wish of a player? How do you kind of see it, that happening? Do you think there's some value in that, or is it always counterproductive?
First off, I love the NBA, David. I am a huge NBA fan. However, I'm really sick of the way the NBA has been trending for the last few years of, if a player wants to go somewhere, they're going to go. They're just going to go. They have a lot of player power. They want to recruit players. They can recruit players. It almost becomes like they're back at school and they're just picking their friends to play with. So I think having too much player power, and in this case in football, a player wanting to stay but being sold, and then a player wanting to go but being kept, I don't really feel bad for them. I don't. Now, from a team perspective, I wouldn't keep them if I thought they were going to be a problem. If they're going to be that much of a distraction, then no, you're not going to keep them. And unfortunately, you're just now dealing with a prissy player. You're dealing with somebody that is folding his arms, stomping his feet and saying, no, I don't want to play here anymore. But if that's not the case, then it's a business. And by the way, players just can't dictate everything. Now, it's interesting here because you're obviously giving two opposite examples. So on the Chiesa one, it's like if you're Fiorentina, Chiesa is a huge player to you. I mean, he's a huge player to you. So it's not that easy to let him join Juventus, even if he didn't have a huge feeling on it. But just because he wants to join Juventus doesn't mean Fiorentina should be letting him join Juventus. But I think it always just comes back to how willing is the player to stay if they're leaving, obviously. Is it going to be the right deal for all parties? But I don't have sympathy for the player in this situation a lot. Now, someone could say to me, well, Alex, you had sympathy for Eden Hazard finally getting his move to Real Madrid. That's mightily different. That was after a long, long time at Chelsea, and there was a contract, obviously, that was just not going to be renewed on his part. And I was more okay with him leaving from that standpoint, from the contract, from the business standpoint of things. there were some people who were like, oh, he deserves the move. Yeah, he does technically, but I don't like to play in that game. I don't like to say, well, Chiesa deserves the move because he's been so good for Fiorentina, and now it's time for him to go to a better Serie A team, or Cutrone deserves to stay. I mean, it's a business at the end of the day, so I don't get into all that sentimental stuff. So I guess maybe my NBA fandom background impacts my standpoint on this, but I don't like when players are complete objects and they're treated as such, but I also don't like the extreme opposite where players these days can really dictate where they're going. And I mean, with the help of their agents, they usually get the move they want. So I guess overall, my answer is I'm siding with the clubs overall on this one. So David, that's my stance. Now, there's obviously still two players that are heavily, heavily rumored in terms of where their next destination is. One player is somebody who has talked about him wanting to leave his current team and go to Serie A, and that's Romelu Lukaku. And another is Paulo Dybala, and he's just a very interesting player to figure out right now whether he's a good fit at Juve or whether he's going elsewhere. So what is the latest on Dybala and Lukaku?
So it's an interesting one, and there's been a lot of buzz on a potential swap with Lukaku going to Juve and Dybala heading to Manchester United as part of the deal. As it stands, if that were to happen, Juventus is looking to get an extra 10, 15 million because they value Dybala higher than Lukaku. So a lot has been made about this. Is this move just interference on Inter to make their life harder with Lukaku? Is it an attempt to force Inter to spend to meet Manchester United's asking price for Lukaku, which could then open the door for Icardi joining Juve? So a lot of people are asking me, is that Juve's main motivation? I think you can make a great case that is likely the biggest motivation, but I also wouldn't exclude altogether that Juve has some interest in it of itself in Lukaku. A couple of things that were interesting. Sarri mentioning that Ronaldo was going to play mainly on the wing this season. And Juve, when they kind of do their depth chart and where they put their players and roles, have listed Dybala essentially as a central striker. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast, how Dybala could play that false nine role that we saw Mertens at Napoli and with lesser success Hazard at Chelsea play that role Dybala doing there. But he's not the classic number nine that Ronaldo played off of with Benzema at Real Madrid. The other factor is Juve sporting director Paratici. He's been interested in Lukaku in the past. It's not the first time that Lukaku is linked to Juve. Granted, it was mainly when Conte was there, and we know Conte is pretty much obsessed with it. So I wouldn't completely rule out that Juve does have some interest in Lukaku aside from Inter. If this, though, works out that they put more pressure on Inter to get Lukaku and they end up with Icardi, I think they would be okay with that. Now, Dybala in and of itself is an interesting situation. He's coming back to Turin this week to meet with Juve, and Sarri's been on vacation from the Copa America. His desire is to stay at Juve, but yesterday Nedved, they did the schedules for Serie A, said that, you know, they would be open to considering offers for Dybala, but nothing concrete has come in. Dybala, I've always felt, and I've also been told, that his preference would have been La Liga over the Premier League. There doesn't seem to be interest right now from La Liga. I still think PSG is a possibility for him as well. So let's see what happens. I think right now it's about 50-50 if Dybala is going to be at Juve. I do think if he leaves, they would end up with likely either Icardi or Lukaku. So speaking of that, Alex, I want to ask you your opinion on this. When we look at Juve, we mentioned how Chiesa wants to go there. Juve has an agreement with him, but not Fiorentina. And they are linked to these two central strikers in Lukaku and Icardi. In your opinion, next season, who would be a better addition for Juve between Lukaku, Icardi, or Chiesa?
Chiesa would be the best addition, in my opinion. Then Lukaku, then Icardi. I'm putting Icardi last because I actually just don't think, profile-wise, he's great in Maurizio Sarri's system. I'm going to continue with this. I just think he is such a distraction right now to any team that I would stay away from him if I was really any team. I think Juve probably have the dressing room to deal with an Icardi, but still, just from a playing standpoint and a personality standpoint, no. Lukaku, I definitely have my reservations on how he would fit in Sarri's system at times, meaning he has that heavy touch, and I can't necessarily see him being that intricate in some of their movements. But you could make the argument that he could have maybe a Gonzalo Higuain impact that Higuain had at Napoli, but I don't know. That's still a little bit much for me. But the main reason why I'm putting Chiesa first on that list is because I just don't think Juventus have that need at striker. Now, technically, they do a little bit more now with Moise Kean going elsewhere, and I know we'll talk about that in a little bit, but still, I think Ronaldo and Dybala, and if Kean had stayed, I think Kean would have been a great third shout, but I think Ronaldo and Dybala should be playing the striker position for Juventus. I really do. I think Dybala should get it. I think Dybala should try and be in that quote-unquote Mertens role, and then I would have Ronaldo, while Dybala's in that spot playing wing position. I would have Bernardeschi, even though there are rumors that he could play even in the midfield, but still I'd have Bernardeschi, I'd have Chiesa, I'd have Douglas Costa. So I feel like you would have plenty of wingers, but I think Chiesa would be somebody that would really be worth having on the wing. So I would say Chiesa. So I'm going to rank that as Chiesa, Lukaku, and then Icardi last. So once again, that's mainly because I believe a lot in Paulo Dybala in that false nine position, Mertens role position, if you will, in Sarri's system. And I also think there are games where Sarri should put Ronaldo there. So I just don't necessarily see the need at striker like many others do. All right, so David, there obviously is going to be a little bit of a transition here, but Milan, they were in Boston. So how would you describe Milan's weekend in our home?
So it was great to meet so many awesome Milan fans during this event. I want to send a huge shout out to my friend David, who runs the Milan Club Philly, and the guys from the New York Fan Club, Milan Fan Club in New York, Franco and company, put on really a lot of very, very cool events for the Milan fans there, both at Gillette and before. So Saturday I went, technically the training session was closed. You could still see a little bit, and there was a meet and greet with the players afterwards, which was really cool. I have to say, I went to the game at Gillette against Benfica. I have to say a couple of things that stand out. We've talked a lot about Giampaolo on the podcast, and we're going to talk about it in our interview with our friend Alex Frasio at the end. I'm convinced at least tactically, purely from a sporting point of view, Giampaolo is the best manager Milan has had since Allegri. You could just see, especially at the game against Benfica, granted preseason, I don't want to overreact to it, that Milan is playing calcio finally. It's not just defensive counterattack. They actually have an idea of what they want to do. At the training session, I saw them practice over and over, starting the actions from the back. I just don't know how much of that type of work was being done under Gattuso before. So I think there's a lot of reasons for optimism for Milan based on Giampaolo. We'll get into it more in the questions. I know the results weren't great, but remember, Milan's pretty late in there. It's pretty early in their summer preparation. Serie A doesn't start for another 3 weeks, but I think what you've seen from Milan as far as plan, what they want to do with their players, they're actually going to have an offensive philosophy they haven't had in a while. Want to give a couple of shout outs to the really cool people that I met at the game. Vinny Bartuca, thank you for your great hospitality. Ruizinho dos Santos, Maurizio from Philly. A lot of really cool guys that I met there. So very well done by Milan. I also think they did excellent work making the fans feel, they got to meet the players and all. So it was a good event. I'm more optimistic on Milan based on what I saw over the weekend than I was before. So now let's get to some hot transfer topic, Alex. This morning, we're recording this on Tuesday. All hell broke loose. Before we go over the other updates, a couple ones that were posted on the Marzio site. Pepe to Everton's done. He signed. Bruno Fernandes, very close to joining Man United. Same with Maguire. Last few details are being worked out on that, but looks like Manchester United is going to have a strong end. The transfer window in the Premier League closes soon. Man United is sprinting to the finish line. But there's been a lot more other things to talk about, Alex. So what are the hot transfer topics that we're going to discuss on today's podcast?
All right. Well, this is very, very hot. I even debated a lot about this on Twitter this morning. David, what did you make of the Moise Kean to Everton deal?
It was in the air for a while. And look, you know, I've said it for a while that unfortunately, not unfortunately, but the reality is, you know, loan armies, homegrown players, and we saw this with Cutrone, a lot of these young players are in a lot of ways financial assets. There's typically no amortized value to have to get rid of. If you sell a young player for a club that you've homegrown, it's essentially a pure profit. So you can never really say, well, why did Juve sell Moise Kean when they still have Higuain and Mandzukic? Those are really comparing apples and oranges. Sure, Higuain and Mandzukic have big wages. There is some financial advantage to shedding those, but you can make a big capital gain on those players. Kane's reported transfer fee is between 30 to 40 million. That's going to be essentially pure profit for Juve. He also had just 1 year left on his deal. They would have had to extend his contract, so they make a big capital gain on him. No way around it. This is a tough loss for Juve. Kane was a really good player, showed a lot of flashes. You look at the age of Juve's attack. It's definitely a setback. But for me, you can't say, oh, they should have sold Higuain and Mandzukic. Those guys will very likely leave anyway. You do that for different reasons. Now, Juve didn't, as is reported now, they do not have an official buyback clause on him, but they have a good relationship with Everton, and they left it as if Everton down the road entertains bids to sell, they will accept. They will give Juve the opportunities to match the bids that they received. So not an official buyback clause. Now for Moise Kean, and you can tell me in a second, Alex, if you see him playing regularly there, at Juve would have been tough for him to play regularly. We know Sarri with young players, and he seems to have a pretty good idea of what his attack will look like. Maybe they want more of a veteran like Lukaku or Icardi, but Kane gets a big raise. He's reported to have an annual salary of $3 million after taxes, so significantly more than he was making at Juve, I would imagine, with a pretty decent chance of playing. So I know it's a tough loss for Juve, no way around it. Dybala as well would represent a massive plusvalenza for Juve because they've had it for a while. They've amortized those transfer fees. Those players fetch capital gains. You can do that with Mandzukic and Higuain. Looking at an Everton squad, do you see Kane having a pretty significant role off the get-go, Alex?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. I definitely do. I mean, they have Richarlison, who can play that striker position, but really he plays a lot also in the wing position, and I think actually they'll coexist quite well. So, yeah, I mean, I think Kane is going to certainly get his chance, his platform to succeed in the Premier League for a decent team. Obviously not a top team, but I think people are probably sleeping on Everton a little bit. I mean, they are one of the teams that could be a danger to Chelsea for being a top six team. But for Moise Kean, I still thought he would probably have just as good of a chance breaking through overall at Juventus. Meaning, of course, he's going to get more playing time at Everton. And I think he has a good opportunity to take that playing time and run with it and become an even bigger player. But the reason why I also rated him staying at Juventus so highly is because he had such a good situation around him to break in but ease in, because he had players like Ronaldo, Dybala, Bernardeschi, Costa all around him, where there's not going to be loads and loads of pressure for him just to be the man. He can learn from Ronaldo. He can learn from all of these players around him. But I still saw so many opportunities for him to either be a spark off the bench in a big game or a situational starter in a lesser game. And let's be real, Juventus has lesser games. They absolutely do. They need to manage the squad. I don't care if it's Sarri and he isn't famous for rotating. There definitely will need to be some rotation, especially since some of the players are older. And I just still saw opportunities for Kane to break through. I mean, almost in a similar situation with Hudson-Odoi last season under Sarri, where, fine, technically there was Eden Hazard in front of him, there was Pedro, there was Willian, who are both much older, but there was an opportunity for Hudson-Odoi, if he played well, to play more, more, and more. And I saw that for Moise Kean. I know, obviously, because of FFP and for business reasons, this move was necessary for Juventus. But, David, we speak so highly of Juve's moves. I mean, they're always so, so good. I mean, they're just a brilliant, brilliant run team. This is one of them where I'm not necessarily applauding them. I know they have to technically do this deal, especially the direction they want to go in. And I'm sure it probably won't hurt them. I'm sure they'll do just fine. But for Juve, I would have thought it would have made more sense to keep Moise Kean. For Moise Kean, like I said, I think he can break through with Everton, and I think he could break through with Juventus. But this one just does confuse me a little bit because, man, he just looked like a really special player in the black and white. So it'll be a very interesting one to look out after. And by the way, the Premier League is dripping now, dripping with young talent. So thank you, Juventus. You just added another really good young player to the Premier League. So it'll be very interesting. So, David, next hot transfer topic. Let's move to Milan and their attack. What will it look like next season, in your opinion?
So, guys, this is where I remind you that Alex and I can't control the ebbs and flows of the transfer news, when it happens and how. I know we've been talking a lot about Juve and Milan, but look, these are things we have to cover. We tried to balance it out by having a guest on Inter and talking about mid-table, but we can't control this type of news and we have to cover it. So Milan's about to land Leao, who arrives from Ligue 1, very promising young player. Arrived from the Portuguese league the year before, did well, scored 8 goals. A very promising player. Seems Mendes is behind this one as well. They are essentially turning over the money they received for Cutrone and the 5 million for Giallao in the deal for Leao. So they're essentially flipping a backup striker and a Primavera player, as Juan Alberto Schiaffino, someone that I follow on Twitter, mentioned. So I think this kind of makes sense. I'm not a huge expert on Leao, but definitely strikes me, of everything I've read and seen, that he has more upside than Cutrone. So they are making that move. The Correa deal has stalled quite a bit. I think the Andre Silva deal not happening was part of that. Also, Atletico Madrid had a very high valuation for Correa. The other one is Suso. I thought he played pretty well in the trequartista role. Let's see if Milan holds on to him, because he is a Bosman. They can make a pretty significant profit on him. So Milan is starting to take shape. They do need to get some support for Piontek, and I think Leao will be able to do that.
Hmm. Okay, David. This one has really strung along all summer long. What's the latest on Edin Dzeko to Inter?
Yeah, this has taken a while because Dzeko has an expiring contract, has just 1 year left. He's been wanting to join Inter for a while. Roma, however, set a price of 20 million, and they said, we won't take a penny less. Now with Lukaku, they still haven't been able to get a deal done with Man United. In an ideal world, they'd want both Lukaku and Dzeko. Now it's not certain they'll get either of them. Roma has also pitched, hey, if you want Dzeko, we'll take Icardi and give you 30 million. So Dzeko and 30 million for Icardi, doesn't seem that's going to happen. But I think there's some pretty good momentum for Dzeko to Inter, and I could see Higuain at Roma. Inter, though, with just less than a month ago to the start of the season, they really need to start figuring out their striker situation, because right now they really only have Lautaro Martinez, unless Conte is going to move Perisic to striker, which at this point I think is going to happen.
Okay, David. Another player who seems to have an inevitable move coming, maybe not. Could Sami Khedira join Arsenal?
Yeah, so Khedira was at a recent Arsenal game on Sunday, I believe, against Lyon. There's been a lot of speculation that he could go there. He's actually been linked to quite a few clubs, also has been linked to Wolverhampton, also been linked to Fiorentina, Sevilla. But Arsenal, you know, look like they could be a destination for him. They wouldn't have to pay a transfer fee. Juve would be very happy to get rid of Khedira's big salary. He earns over $6 million net a season, $12 million before taxes. Let's see if a club comes close to wanting to pay that. I think Arsenal would like to pay him a little bit less. So let's see what happens. But Khedira definitely made it pretty obvious by going to the game recently.
All right, next topic. Another player who is grabbing many, many, many headlines. Anything new, David, on Milinkovic-Savic?
So we talked quite a bit about him on last episode, that Man United had, there's really nothing completely concrete. They are definitely interested. Lazio set a price between 80 and 90 million. They would move him, but there's really no immediate action from Man United. They are, like we reported today on the Marzo site, about to sign Bruno Fernandes. To me, if Pogba leaves, they'll go all in for Milinkovic-Savic. We only have till August 8th to see how it develops. Now, since our last episode, both Lazio's coach Inzaghi stated that he could, that while he'd like to keep Milinkovic-Savic, he would understand that the club would have to consider an important offer. Milinkovic-Savic, who last summer at the retreat verbally denied he was leaving the club, saying he was staying. He hasn't done the same this year. And yesterday, Lazio president Lotito, when they were doing the schedule for Serie A, said that he has yet to receive a big offer, but that he would consider it. So everything that's been saying verbally seems to match the reports that we talked about on the podcast last Friday.
All right, David. So let's move to Fiorentina. When are they going to make their first real additions of the Camiso era?
Yeah, so on Fiorentina, a lot of the talk has been on Chiesa, is he staying or going, but they really haven't made any additions beyond bringing back keeper Dragowski to replace Lafont, who left for Nantes, but they are about to close their first two deals. They are about to get Kevin Prince Boateng from Sassuolo. He had played at Barcelona the second half of last season, and very promising right back Lirola. So for a combined deal of around 15 million with Sassuolo, they'll get both players. I think these are very solid moves. Lirola at right back would allow them to move Milenkovic at center back permanently. There's been some talk that their captain Pizzella could leave. Lirola's an above average right back in Serie A. So I think these first few moves by Comiso are well done. So it took a little while, but I think Fiorentina off to a nice start with their additions on the transfer market.
All right. So those were our hot transfer topics, but our Twitter questions are really just as hot. So, David, first Twitter question. Man, this is becoming quite the story. Is there any chance Suning's Chinese club could loan Gareth Bale to Inter?
Yeah, so going into the weekend, it looked for sure that Bale was going to China. Then it backtracked. Doesn't look like it's going to happen, at least for the time being. Bale could end up staying at Real Madrid. But I saw Fabrizio Romano reported this, and that's what I've heard the same, is that there was never really any talk of Bale going to Inter on loan from Suning, their club, their parent club. Suning owns a club in China, and the thought was that as a way to get around FFP, the Chinese club would buy Bale and then loan him to Inter. As Fabrizio Romano said, there was never any talk of that being the case. So I wouldn't expect that. If the Bale to China rekindles and the transfer window closes there, I think, in 2 days, Inter, though, doesn't look like it would be part of the equation.
Interesting. That has been quite the saga. Really has. Now, David, could the ninja, Raja Nainggolan, join Galatasaray?
So an interesting one. A lot of people in Turkey, love Turkish Twitter, have been tweeting me about this. There's buzz that he could go to Galatasaray. As we talked on the last podcast, both Sampdoria and Cagliari have expressed interest in him, but they wouldn't be able to come close to paying him the wages he earns at Inter. Turkish clubs usually pay big wages, so they would probably be able to satisfy him there. But also because of family personal reasons, it sounds like Nainggolan wants to stay in Italy. So I don't think it's that realistic, but it would be a nice move. I mean, Nainggolan at Galatasaray seems like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, I could see him doing really, really well there, to be honest. So staying on Inter, David, should Inter consider bringing back Gabigol?
Yeah, so there's been buzz about that because they are so desperate for strikers. They have no one, and Gabigol, from what I understand, has been performing well I just don't know how much of a fit he is with Conte. It's not like Gabigol's particularly a bad guy, but he's known more for off-field than what he does on the pitch. I don't know how much of a he would fit even tactically with Conte. So I wouldn't expect this to happen. I still think Inter's going to end up having to loan him for another season. I would imagine they still have a considerable amortized value left for him, but I don't see him being part of the squad.
All right, well, moving to another striker or forward, why don't Inter consider Moussa Dembele as an alternative to Lukaku?
I like the thought, but it seems Conte's really obsessed with Lukaku and he really wants veteran strikers. I mean, he'd love both Lukaku and Zeko. Now, as an alternative to Lukaku, we are hearing about Cavani, another striker who's been linked to Conte in the past. So I like the thought, but I think Conte just wants a real veteran up front. I think already with Lautaro Martinez, he feels like he has the young guy and would just like a veteran next to him.
All right, sorry. That's your choice. So next question, David. Do you see any big incoming transfers for Serie A in August?
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting because the transfer window in the PL closes August 8th. Serie A, we go till September 2nd. Absolutely insane, if you ask me. I think we need to see this whole striker carousel, how it gets resolved. The Icardi, the Higuain, the Lukaku. And right now, is Napoli also going to try? They lost out on Pepe. We were talking about him potentially joining them just last Friday. That's off the equation. Is Napoli going to go make a big splash? I think, Icardi will likely stay within the league. So let's see what kind of domino effect there. So I could see maybe Lukaku and Cavani, and maybe Lukaku at Juve, Cavani at Inter, something like that, and Napoli making another big splash would be my guess if I had to, try to guess if there will be some other big incoming moves in Serie A.
All right. Interesting question here, David. What did you make of Suso in the Trequartista role?
Yeah, so on Sunday, he mainly played behind Piontek and Castillejo. I thought he played pretty well. Like, look, Suso is a technical player, pretty good dribbler and whatnot. I thought he did pretty well. He's played on the wing most of his career in Serie A, and Gianpaolo's trying to play him there. I'm not opposed to him being a starter there, but at the same time, he also could bring a pretty big financial gain for Milan because he's a Bosman. So I think they need to look at it, if by moving him, can we replace him with someone more of a natural fit in that role? So not the worst thing in the world, but again, it's going to have to come down to finances and if you can get an upgrade for around the same price.
Okay, David, next Twitter question. Let's stay on Milan. Did Milan get a good return on Cutrone?
So as we said earlier, it depends if Leao is going to be a hit in Serie A. If Leao's a hit in Serie A, and as our friend Juan Alberto Schiaffino tweeted, they essentially used the Cutrone funds and the Giallo, who was the homegrown player who went for Leao as part of the deal. If he explodes, then yeah, it was well worth it. Again, I think Cutrone is a pretty good player. I'm not sure he can really be anything more than a backup striker at Milan. They got close to 20 million euro for him. Moise Kean, anywhere between 30 to 40. I think Moise Kean definitely has more upside than Cutrone. So I think all things considered, Milan did pretty well there. But again, it always depends if how you reinvest the money and how the player you bring in to replace Cutrone performs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting watching Cutrone in his new home, that's for sure. So, David, regardless of one's feelings about Juventus, is there another club that can rival their trajectory in the past 15 years?
See, I'm not an expert of other leagues, so I'm going to present the case, and then maybe our listeners can say if there's anyone comparable. I mean, back in 2006, when Italy won the World Cup, there was the Calciopoli scandal. Juve went down to Serie B, lost a ton of really good players. They really struggled in their return to Serie A before Marotta and Paratici came around. They very slowly and methodically built their team. They were mocked for the loan with option to buy, the Bosman signings, but slowly but surely they built their revenues. They were mocked for losing Champions League finals, but again, the revenues helped them get to the point of being able to sign Ronaldo and De Ligt. So I think in a lot of ways, Juve had a methodical way to the top. Now they are a completely different club than even 3-4 years ago. And, you know, they've done a lot of things on the transfer market that other teams are now copying. So, yeah, I think they've done a lot of things right. They've made mistakes as well. But I think you can make a great case that, few clubs can rival that story.
Yeah, their trajectory has been special, really special. Okay, interesting question here. If Juventus got rid of all of their deadwood, Higuain, Matuidi, Mandzukic, Khedira, Perrin, and Rugani, could they afford Pogba or Eriksen?
Not likely, in my opinion. Of those players listed, I mean, you could make a plusvalenza on Perrin, although with the injuries, maybe not. You can make a significant capital gain on Rugani, not so much the others. You would shed a lot of wages with Higuain, Matuidi, and Mandzukic and Khedira. To me, shedding Higuain's wages, like right now, he's really a burden that returned. So it's not that I see it as a plus getting rid of Higuain's wages, like it's something you have to do anyway. So in my opinion, no, but Kane and Rugani, those guys could represent some pretty big plusvalenza, but I think Juve is looking more at another striker. I've said it again. I think if they make one more big purchase, it'll be one between Lukaku, Icardi, and Chiesa. I don't think it'll be another midfielder.
Interesting. Okay. Next Twitter question, David. Sassuolo have a really promising squad. What can they achieve this next season, in your opinion?
Yeah, we talked about it with our friend Enrico Passarella last Friday. I'm a big fan of Sassuolo's Mercato. Bian came back, Traoré from Empoli, Caputo. I have question on their defense because losing the morale is a tough blow, but they have Marlon, who they brought from Barcelona, who could potentially replace him. But I really like their squad on paper. I think they could be not like Atalanta, maybe like Torino. Maybe they could be the version we saw of Parma in the first half of the season, although Parma kind of fell apart in the second half. But their ceiling could potentially be like Torino, who are now in the Europa League. But I definitely like a lot what Sassuolo's done in keeping the Zerbi. So thanks to our listeners for the questions. Now let's get to our patrons. If you like Calcioland and you want to hear more of it for a small fee, you can hear about two extra hours a month of Calcioland. We're also going to record a special quarterly podcast for our patrons really soon. And you also get some articles from me. And we donate your first monthly pledge to the Insuperabili nonprofit in Italy. So if you become a patron and if you don't like what you get, you've helped the charity and you can then cancel.
So I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Alex Parozio from Gazzetta dello Sport, one of my favorite writers in Italy on calcio. He's an astute observer, especially of the tactical aspects. So when Juve hired Sarri, he was one of the first people I wanted to talk to, and he's back from vacation. So we are going to talk about Sarri and some of the other new managers in Serie A. So, Alex, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on Calcioland.
Hi, David. It's a pleasure for me. Hello to all your listeners.
So, Alex, when I started following you on Twitter was the season, the best season Sarri had at Napoli. You had a big passion for him as a manager. As do yeah. I. You followed him at Chelsea. And now, you know, surprisingly, he is at Juve. A few weeks have passed since the official announcement came. But I want to ask you, as someone who covered Sarri for a while, obviously, you know, Juve and what all that means. Tell me a little bit, what was your reaction to the news Juve was hiring Sarri?
Well, to be honest, I didn't believe it because of the story between Sarri and Juventus, the rivalry in back in the years he spent in Napoli. I thought that he had a very big passion in Napoli, and Juventus was kind of an enemy. I mean, you heard about the revolution that Napoli fans were trying to do, no? When they say, let's go fino al palazzo, straight to the palace, straight to the power. And I think it was surprising when I heard about Sarri, but I can understand him because, you know, Juventus is now one of the best four or five teams in Europe, in the world. So it's a big chance for him. He can work with Cristiano Ronaldo, with a lot of important players. I think you cannot say no to Juventus if they call you. And that's why he accepted. And I was also surprised by the choice that Juventus made, because I think that it's really a revolution. It's something that maybe Juventus never did in his history, because we all know that the motto of Juventus is winning is the only thing that counts. And from now on, it is not the only thing that counts, not anymore. They want to play an attractive football. They need to play an attractive football, because they know that if they want to develop, if they want to make big money, you have to be attractive, not only winning the Scudetto or playing in the Champions League to the semi-final or to the final. You have to play an attractive football. That's how you can sell the brand. And I think this is what Juventus is demanding to Sarri.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in Juve's history, I can only think of maybe when they hired Maifredi, that one year that was a disaster, that was somewhat similar, but Sarri at least has more of a track record. So let's talk about the style, because this is something you talked a lot about with Allegri, that you felt he was too tentative in the Champions League. So do you think, and you mentioned Sarri's style is going to make Juve more attractive. So let me ask you, do you also think this is going to be more effective in the Champions League? I mean, Juve can probably win the Scudetto with or without Sarri, but we know what the big objective is.
Yeah, I can say yes, even if I can say, we all can say that there is no person in the world who can say, I hire you and you will make me win the Champions League, because Bayern and Manchester City tried with Guardiola, is the best manager in the world, and they didn't even make it a final. So we cannot say that. But Sarri's kind of football can help Juventus, because in Europe you need to be, you need to have an attacking team. You always have to try to score one more goal. That's not what Juventus, in my opinion, did in the last, particularly in the last year. They did it today against Atletico Madrid, and they achieved the qualification, but it was not enough. I think that this kind of football, yes, can help Juventus. Where can they get? We cannot say, because we know that Champions League depends on two games in 15 days sometimes. Yeah. So you cannot say, but this kind of football is what European football has right now.
So let me ask you specifically, when you look at Juve's squad, and you know, a few players could leave, but we have a pretty good idea of what Juve's team is going to look like. In your opinion, which players are going to benefit the most from the shift from Allegri to Sarri's style of play?
I think this is a big issue, the real big issue of this season, because I can tell you for sure Cristiano Ronaldo is maybe the player who will benefit the most from Sarri. Mm-hmm. Because in Napoli, Sarri gave 36 goals to Higuain, who used to score, I don't know, 20, 25 maybe. And with him, he scored 36. So this kind of football can help him to reach milestones he gets to Real Madrid. I can say 40, 45 maybe. But the real big issue is that, in my opinion, not many players can, at the moment, fit this kind of football, fit the Sarri ball, because they're coming from a kind of very different football, a very individual football, an individual style, so they have to shift, they have to change their minds. This is the big work that Sarri will need to do, to change Juventus players' minds. He already said that. He said particularly on defense, he said we have to defend what we have in front, not what behind us. It's a shift they have to make. I think about, for example, Pjanic, who's an excellent player, in my opinion. But if we think about Jorginho, who is the playmaker in Serie A, he plays one or two touches. Pjanic doesn't play one or two touches. He always needs to touch the ball many times before he plays the ball. So many players have to change their style of play. This is what Sarri needs to do. It will take time. It will take time as it took in Napoli, because we remember the first game, the first year of Sarri, they didn't play well. He changed his formation. He changed his tactics, and it will take time.
So let's shift to Inter. One of the last times we had you on, you mentioned how Conte is one of the few managers that truly makes a difference when it comes to points and the standings. So now he's at Inter. There's some uncertainty on what the striker situation will look like. But in your opinion, what type of impact is Conte going to be able to make at Inter?
Huge impact. A very huge impact. Because as we said, we already talked about this thing. I think Conte is that kind of manager who can take the best from every single player. We didn't see much so far in the friendlies, but we start to see something, and the kind of style. They are very aggressive. They can play the ball. I think in terms of personality, in terms of in many terms, I think Conte will have a great, great impact to Inter. For I think he wants to have a revenge on Juventus. So
yeah,
that's something more, something we can add to the season.
Absolutely. And again, we don't know too much about the strikers yet. We've heard Lukaku, Dzeko. But when you look at the rest of the team, we've had Godin come in, Barella, Sensi, who I want to ask you about in a second because I know her fan. Do you start to see Inter building a team that is going to work pretty well for Conte?
I think so. I think so, because every head seems to be what Conte wants. So we'll see. A lot will depend on which striker will arrive. But what they're doing is what Conte wants. Because you said Godin, yes, he goes with Skriniar. He goes with in a defense that really works.
De Vrij.
He's working. De Vrij, it's a three-man defense that can work very well. We have Barella and Sensi that complete a good, very good midfield, in my opinion. They can run, they can play the ball, they can score goals, because Barella is learning to score goals. He didn't score much, but he has that kind of attitude. So I think that a Conte team is coming. Yeah.
So let me ask you about Sensi, because I saw you tweeted about him, and I know he's the typical type of player that you would like, someone che gioca pallone, that likes to move the ball around. So tell me a little bit how you think Sensi specifically fits in with Conte and at Inter right now.
I think he is very clever to move into spaces. Conte is trying to teach to build the play from the back. From the goalkeeper. With that kind of play, with that style of play, you need a midfielder or two midfielder that comes in the spaces to take the ball and to play it quickly. That's what Sensi does. And what I think that it was very important what he did last year with De Zerbi, because he learned specifically this kind of play, this kind of style. Yeah. So I think he can help. An issue is about him, about Barella. They are not giants.
Yeah.
You don't see them. They're like dwarfs, yeah, we say in Italy.
Yeah.
But they have a very good technique. Very good technique, and they can play the ball quickly. What we say before about Pjanic, that must learn that kind of play. Well, Sensi can do that, can already do that.
Very interesting. Let's shift to Milan. I want to ask you a few things. So Giampaolo arrived. You know, on paper, he definitely has an offensive philosophy, is a little bit from the Sarri school of managers. Do you think, in your opinion, tactically and as a manager overall, he has the potential to be the best coach Milan has had since Allegri left?
Yes, because he is a proper manager. If we see all the managers that came after Allegri, and if we go to see what they did after they coached Milan, Fedor, where did he go? We don't know. Brocchi, third division. Inzaghi, second division. Mihailovic, yes, good, but middle-low level, let's say. Okay. Montella, middle-low level. He risked to be relegated last year with Fiorentina. He didn't do well at Sevilla.
Yeah.
So we're talking about all managers that after Milan didn't show much. Gattuso as well. Where will we go? Nobody wants him.
Mm-hmm.
So Giampaolo, I think, is a proper manager. He worked well in the last few years. He plays an attractive football. He can get some more points with the team he has, with the player he has. I don't think that Milan can compete for the Scudetto. I think we are talking about fourth position, maybe a Champions League spot.
Yes, maybe
they can fight for that.
Yeah, I kind of see them more closer to, obviously, to Lazio and Atalanta than, say, Inter and Napoli, for sure. I agree with you there. So let's talk about the current players on Milan, and you can mention also those that arrived, so Bennacer, Krunic. In your opinion, when you look at Milan's squad, which players are going to benefit the most by having Giampaolo as their manager?
I think that can be Paquetá.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't see much from him in the few months he spent at Milan, but he has the qualities to be maybe not the trequartista. I can think about him as a mezzala, let's say, an attacking midfielder. Yes, in that position, I think he has the potentiality to do well. And other players, I don't know. Bennacer is a very good head, very good transfer.
Yeah.
Krunic as well, I think, is a good transfer. But we're talking about simple players, so we have to see how they do at Milan. It's a little different from Empoli to Milan. I think that Piontek for sure. Piontek will benefit from Giampaolo. Because he will have someone near to him. We'll see who will be.
Yeah.
It will be important to see who will play with Piontek.
Yeah, Milan's definitely making some changes there. So I want to ask you quickly on Roma. You mentioned De Zerbi earlier. I'm a big fan of his. He seems to have been the runner-up. They went with Fonseca, who arrived from Shakhtar so far. We've heard good things on Fonseca, but again, it's just the preseason. In your opinion, do you think Roma made the right decision going with Fonseca over, say, someone like De Zerbi?
Yes, because De Zerbi would have been eaten by Roma, by the town, by the fans. He's not structured enough. I'm a real fan. I'm a big fan of De Zerbi. Big, big fan. He's a fantastic manager. I think he's going to be one of the best Italian managers, maybe the best manager in the next few years. But I think he's not ready yet for that kind of team, for that kind of fans. We all know that managing Roma is not easy at all.
Yeah.
And I think that the only solution for Roma was to hire a manager from outside Italy. That's a good choice, because every other manager would have been burnt by the town, and as I say, by the fans, by everything. It's not easy. If you're Italian,
that's
and you know
sure.
Rome, you know the club, you know it's not easy. So
yeah.
I think they received many no's, because I think they asked for many managers, and many managers said no, because it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, Roma is probably a piazza more calda than Juve, Inter, or Milan, all right? Would you say that's probably more pressure than almost all the bigger teams? It's pretty wild. So let's close on this. Let's look at the whole landscape in Serie A. You can pick, in your opinion, which team has made a good decision with their manager position. So it could be a team that hired a new one, maybe someone like Sampdoria with Di Francesco, or a team that just kept their manager. In your opinion, which team did well with this regard?
For sure, Andrea Pioli. He deserved to stay in Serie A, despite the relegation with Empoli. He showed a very attractive football, a good football. So I think he deserved to go to Genoa. We'll see if Preziosi will give him time to show his football, because we all know that Preziosi is not so patient with his managers. But if he's given time, he can do a good job. For sure, Atalanta did very well to keep Gasperini. I know that every time you call me, I have to talk about Gasperini, but yes, he's one of the best managers in Italy, so he only deserves that. Di Francesco, I don't know. I want to see how he comes from Rome. Because again, it's not easy. Other managers, not a good choice for Fiorentina to keep Montella.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me think. No, I think we're done. That's it.
Yeah. But Andrea Zoli is a great shout. You seem to really like those managers from the Empoli school, and I can see why. So, Alex, I can't thank you enough. Always your insights fantastic. You get bonus points for knowing that Puffy is Smurfs in English. So thank you so much for coming on. It's a real pleasure to chat with you, and I look forward to having you on in the next few months.
Thank you, David.
All right, great to hear from Alex. Absolutely, not just saying it because he shares my name. But David, before we, of course, end this episode, let's talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Massive, massive movie with massive, massive stars. What's your take on Quentin Tarantino's new film?
So we're recording this Tuesday. I've already seen it twice. I'm definitely seeing it at least one more time in the theaters, maybe two. At worst, this is my favorite Tarantino movie since Inglourious Basterds. I need to see it a few more times to kind of see if I want to rank it higher than fifth or sixth of his best movies ever. Really, really enjoyed it. So a couple of things, and there'll be no spoilers. I know this isn't coming out in Europe till later on. Fantastic performances. DiCaprio absolutely kills in this. Really some scenes that will absolutely blow you away how good he is in this. Brad Pitt, by the same token, really outstanding. I'd be very surprised if at least one of them doesn't win an Oscar. I think DiCaprio will be nominated for Best Lead and Brad Pitt Supporting Actor, although he's essentially a co-lead. I think this is really a nod to Hollywood. It's about a transition phase for the studio system in Hollywood. It kind of uses the Manson and the end of the 60s to me as a prop to show a transition in the movie industry. The Manson stuff is really more to show the end of peace and love in all that. But I really saw it as a great ode to movies, Hollywood and whatnot. I thought the colors of it were amazing. The costumes were terrific. The soundtrack, man, I mean, few people can use songs like Tarantino, Scorsese's the other, but Scorsese always picks songs that we all know and whatnot, and Tarantino always finds the obscure ones. So I absolutely adored
this film. I know there are some people that are very upset because of the ending or whatnot. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to say that the Manson stuff and the ending to me were not what this movie was about. I think he kind of had that as a red herring hanging to kind of keep your attention because it's not a very plot driven movie and whatnot. So I wasn't upset by the ending. I could see how, you know, you could say that, you know, women don't play a big role in this film, but it also depicts a time in society that was very different than today. I wouldn't apply today's standards to it. So I really, really enjoyed it, and I cannot recommend it enough. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we look forward to chatting with you later this week.